Welcome to Unlapped, where we have a shit ton of shit to talk about. So let's get right to it. Katie George, Lawrence Edmondson, Nate Saunders is on the ground in Saudi Arabia getting ready for Saturday's Grand Prix. I think he's currently in the media center writing up different reports. Laz, how's this past week been for you?
It's been a lot busier than I expected it to be. I mean, the start of the season's always busy, right? But this has been off the scale. When we planned out where we would be this year, we decided Nate would be able to survive by himself in Saudi Arabia. and he is doing that. I'm pleased to report. But it feels like we could have done with two people on the ground there, because even today we're speaking just as media day has really come to a close. So I've been keeping an eye on the audio files from the different press conferences coming through and picking out the bits and trying to understand exactly what on earth is going on in Formula One right now, from what the drivers are saying and from what various sources are saying. But it's not what we expected. And poor Nate, who planned to join us on this call, could not tear himself away from the media center because he's got too much work to do and get back to the hotel in time. So here we are. It's just two of us.
It's the gift that always keeps on giving. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It means a great deal. Let's dig into this headline. Is F1 drunk? Because there's so many different stories that we need to touch on. First and foremost, the fallout from the Christian Horner saga, I think is worth mentioning right here at the top, because Max Verstappen had some media availability in Saudi Arabia. And he was questioned about his dad in particular, because Jos Verstappen made some comments that I think took the internet by a storm, that took a lot of people by surprise, because he had questioned, I think, Christian Horner's current place as team principal with this team. And if he remains in that position, Jos Verstappen wonders if it will tear the team apart moving forward. First and foremost, what did you make of Jos Verstappen's comments? A guy that we know is pretty outspoken as the father of Max Verstappen.
Well, they were very pointed at Christian, of course, and they kind of came at the end of a weekend where Christian had somehow or another kind of survived as team principal. Obviously, the investigation by Red Bull's parent company had dismissed the allegations made against him by a female employee. There had then been a leak of files that were purportedly related to that investigation. And at the end of it all, Jos Verstappen came out and basically said that the team could no longer continue if Christian is in charge. And we suspected for some time that there were politics involved here and maybe something deeper going on. And while Jos said that he had nothing to do with any of, you know, it's a quote that kind of didn't get quite the same headlines, but nothing to do with any of what was happening to Christian early in the weekend, it did kind of put him in the middle of it, and seemingly unnecessarily so from Jos's point of view. But it also kind of drew a line, and it really does seem to have created this division now, whereby it's, you know, Jos Verstappen almost saying, along with his son, because the two of them come understandably as a package, it's me and Max or Christian to Red Bull. And I don't suspect that's a position Red Bull are particularly happy to have been put in. And it seems as though there were some talks afterwards, after those comments have been made. There was also a bit of a row in the paddock prior to those comments being made between Jos and Christian that a few people witnessed. So after the race, it seemed that there was an attempt to kind of build a few bridges again. But, you know, those comments still stand, and Jos hasn't retracted them. And in fact, he's gone rallying this weekend. So he's not going to be around to kind of face the consequences of what he said. But his son is. So understandably, Max was the focus of attention today in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, he was. And he was asked if his father regretted his public statements that have certainly casted, you know, doubt on Horner's standing. Max's response was, I thought, interesting. He said, "I have not asked him, but my dad, from how I know him in go-karting, is very outspoken, and he is not a liar. That's for sure." Which is an interesting way to phrase that, because if you read that he's not a liar, then my opinion, and I'm curious to get yours, is that he's saying, he's telling the truth that, you know, he is questioning Christian Horner for good reason. And then you wonder if that's really how Max Verstappen feels, which begs the question we'll get into, you know, is Red Bull the future place for Max Verstappen moving forward? What do you think of him saying his father's not a liar?
Yeah, so Max's default on this mainly has been to go to, look, we just want to perform on track. We want to get the most performance out of the car. You know, I'm not having this, or not letting this distract me and all the rest of it. But yeah, you know, saying that, and also he said that, you know, him and his dad do come as a package. So, you know, he didn't kind of turn around and say, I wish my dad hadn't said that, or I disagree with my dad. He wasn't, but he didn't also say that he 100% agrees with his dad. You know, it was kind of like he tried to tread a line and not, you know, and sit on the fence a bit and not be drawn into it too much, which I guess, you know, is probably his best bet at the moment. But he also made very clear that his loyalty still, you know, lies with his dad. There were some suggestions after Jos's comments first came out that perhaps Max would have to distance himself from his dad, or, you know, if he wanted to stay at Red Bull, perhaps kind of put a degree of separation there. And, you know, throughout Max's career, Jos has been a constant there. You know, he was the guy who drove him to go-kart races all around Europe as a child. He was the guy that...
And dropped him off.
And dropped him off occasionally at service stations to teach him a lesson, which, you know, I mean, that's a whole other podcast there. There's actually an article on ESPN from a few years back if you want to go into more detail on that. Yeah, so, you know, he's always had Jos by his side, and Jos was there when he and their manager, Raymond, as well, decided between joining Red Bull when Max was coming out of Formula 3 or going with Mercedes, and that was a pivotal point in his decision making. And they went with Red Bull because Red Bull could offer him a quicker route into F1, and of course it's, you know, resulted in the success that he's had. So yeah, it doesn't look like Max is about to distance himself from his father in any way, or break up that kind of, because it's obviously a personal relationship, which I believe will never be broken. But also there seems to be a professional relationship there as well, and in how Max kind of decides what he's doing with his career. Jos is very involved. So, yeah, it seems like Max is standing with him. But quite what that means going forward for relations with Red Bull, I guess depends on how much they want, or how much Jos wants to continue to push the comments that he made after Bahrain.
Yeah, it's interesting. If there's any driver, I think, that can separate the two, right? Some distracting comments, whatever you want to call it, with the saga with Christian Horner, I think it's Max, because of how professional, how robotic sometimes he seems, and the way that he's able to compete at the highest level. So you think that he could be able to distinguish the two, but gosh, I got to imagine when your dad's getting involved and making comments about your team boss, that makes for a very interesting dynamic when you go to work. And I just cannot imagine navigating that. And I can't imagine it's sustainable for a long period of time if those bridges aren't reconnected, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think, if he wants to stay, and it's looking increasingly likely that Christian will stay in his role. You know, he's in Saudi Arabia, continuing, as he has done throughout this whole process. What he says is, business as usual. Well, it's not quite that, as we know. You know, there's been a huge amount of distractions for the team and for everyone in it, including Max. But they did win the first race by about 20 seconds, you know, with Max over Checo, his teammate, in second place. So if that's to continue, then yeah, I think there does need to be a bit of bridge building, and basically Jos and Christian need to accept that they're both going to have to coexist in this environment. But if, you know, if you're overseeing Red Bull as well, you know, they made a very public and, although not particularly transparent, show of support for Christian in this whole investigation process. So to then have Jos turn around and put pressure on them to get rid of Christian is asking, you know, a significant amount of that company to basically backtrack on something. And, you know, if they did then go and get rid of Christian on grounds to do with this investigation, then clearly, you know, it would suggest they didn't do a proper job the first time. So I can't see that happening. And that really means that Jos is in a position where he's basically trying to dictate what Red Bull should mm-hmm. do with their own team. Now, Jos is not a member of the Red Bull team. He's not employed by the Red Bull team. He spends most of his time with the Red Bull team, of course, with Max, but he's not a direct employee. So I don't think they'll be dictated to by Jos. And then ultimately, it seems, you know, if a solution cannot be found, if bridges cannot be rebuilt between Christian and Jos Verstappen and therefore Max Verstappen, then I guess Jos and Max will start to look at other options and Red Bull will start to look at other options. But despite a lot of speculation along those lines, it doesn't seem like we're quite at that point yet. It seems like, you know, the next few weeks will be pivotal in deciding whether the two camps have to go down that route.
But for the sake of having fun, let's dive into the speculation, shall we? Because I've seen on the internet Max Verstappen wearing a Mercedes emblem on his chest. People have obviously pointed to the conclusion that Mercedes is going to have an open seat with Lewis Hamilton moving to Ferrari next season. Will Max Verstappen possibly fill the seat next to George Russell? That is a reality I definitely can't wrap my head around, but people are speculating that it could be a possibility. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think if it comes to it, you know, if it comes to the point where Max can't stay at Red Bull, and I really don't think we're there yet, you know, sure. And again, I think it's these next couple of weeks that are going to dictate that. But if you did get to that position, or if, as has been suggested in some corners of the internet, that perhaps the Verstappens are actually looking for a way out of Red Bull because they don't believe in the project beyond 2026. Right. I mean, hard to believe given the dominance the car has now is likely to have in 2025. But of course, 2026 is a new set of regulations where for the first time, Red Bull will be producing their own engines to sit within their car. And, you know, they have no prior experience of doing that. They've employed a lot of the right people to get an engine department in shape. But what if they've got it wrong and they already know that? And what if the Verstappens already know that? So that's been one of the theories, one of the many theories doing the rounds this week. But yeah, if you look at it, you know, if you can't, if you want to leave Red Bull or you can't continue at Red Bull as a racing driver right now, where's your next best option? Well, it probably is Mercedes. And conveniently, if that is the case, there's an open seat in 2025 because we know that Lewis Hamilton is going to Ferrari. So it's very easy to join those dots. And those dots were kind of moved even closer and even easier to join by the fact that Jos was seen discussing who knows what, but discussing something with Toto Wolff throughout the Bahrain weekend on a couple of occasions, again, fairly publicly, because the Red Bull hospitality and the Mercedes hospitality were basically divided by a very slender wall. So it's very easy to kind of poke your head over the garden fence and have a chat. And so all of that means that there is this speculation there. Max, of course, was asked about that today. And he said that when he signed his contract with Red Bull, his current contract, which goes through to 2028, let's not forget, so a very long contract, the intention was to see it out. And he kind of, he didn't say 100% that that was still the intention, but he kind of gave indications that, you know, he's got no desire to leave right now because the car's so good, etc. And then also when he was then asked about Mercedes as an option, he said that nothing in his life he likes to treat as 100%. He always likes to have mm-hmm. options open. So, you know, he did nothing to completely deny the rumors, but equally it wasn't, you know, the sign, I don't think, of, you know, someone who is absolutely going somewhere at this stage, but he left the door just about enough ajar for those rumors to kind of come flooding out. But like I said, I think it's these next couple of weeks and what happens at Red Bull and how the power struggle that's clearly underlying all of this plays out, I think that will be the indicator of what, how seriously Max takes up the potential of a Mercedes option.
You've seen some crazy things in the years that you've covered Formula One. What's a crazier reality? Lewis Hamilton moving to Ferrari to round out his unbelievable career, historic career, or Max Verstappen leaving Red Bull at its height and joining Mercedes?
Well, both would have been utterly crazy to me. And I probably would have, walked off the podcast if you suggested them at the end of last year, but that shows you how wrong I can be. Of course, you couldn't have one without the other. I don't think you could have a situation mm-hmm. where Max went to Mercedes while Lewis was still there, for example. I mean, I think almost every F1 fan in the world would love to see those two drivers in the same team, but I don't think realistically it would happen, mm-hmm. not least because the team paying those two drivers would have a huge, I mean, it wouldn't be part of the budget cap because driver salaries aren't, but they would be paying out a ridiculous amount of money in driver salaries. So I don't think that would have ever happened. So yeah, once we knew that Lewis was going to Ferrari, again, no one ever suspected that Max would be looking for a way out of his Red Bull contract, and mm-hmm. still maybe he won't. But I think once Lewis had done that, certainly it opened up this possibility that if everything just falls apart at Red Bull, as unimaginable as that was at the start of this year, then it does open that option for Max to go to Mercedes. And like I said, you know, really, I think in F1 and this season has kind of proved it out a little bit with what we've seen on track so far this year. There are three teams that will always be either close to the front or, you know, trying to find a way and realistically finding a way back to the front. And that's Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari. The McLarens of this world and Aston Martins of this close mm-hmm. of this world have aspirations, and they will get close, and they have been close. But the three teams you can almost guarantee will always be there are those. So as soon as you're out of one of them as a top driver like Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton, you're looking to go into another.
Before we round out this conversation, I'm just curious, do you think that things could fall apart at Red Bull this season? As good as that car is, do you think that that's a possibility?
I mean, yeah, but based on what's happened over the last few weeks, you know, it's clear that there are divisions within that team that are fairly deep. And what doesn't usually happen in F1, you know, teams do implode fairly regularly in Formula One. What tends not to happen is them imploding whilst they're at the height of their success. Mm-hmm. So I think there's also a possibility that the success on track and the realization that everyone involved in that team, Christian, Max, Jos to some extent, you know, Red Bull itself as a company, have something really good here. And you would think that kind of logic would dictate that you would find a way to resolve the other issues to make sure you don't ruin that good thing that you have. But, you know, strange things, like you said earlier, do happen in Formula One. And after what we've seen this year, I don't think I'd be surprised by anything, you know, anymore. It's just been such a wild season away from the track. You know, we've only had one race. But yeah, such a wild season with everything else going on in the background that I'm not going to rule anything out at this stage.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I planned on pivoting to Mohammed bin Salim, but now that we're talking about implosion, why don't we just skip right to Alpine, and then we can work our way back to Mohammed bin Salim. Alpine, what was that as bad of a possible first Grand Prix that you could think of? I mean, starting at the back row, neither driver was able to secure points in Bahrain. Now we've seen, you know, two extremely important pieces on the technical team depart as a result of it. Can you just kind of give us a bird's eye view of where Alpine is at and the fallout since?
Well, I think this all dates back to at least a couple of years, but certainly last year, and the summer where they lost team principal Otmar Szafnauer. Mm-hmm. Around a similar time, well, at the same time, Alan Permain, longstanding sporting director, left. Pat Fry, who was their chief technical officer, had already decided to leave, and it was announced at the same time. And so it was clear at that stage that there were problems there. Laurent Rossi, who was basically overseeing the whole Alpine project, also left. And so, you know, already this was a team that was massively underperforming compared to where they want to be. When we talk about Alpine, we really should be talking about a team on the same level as Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, because they have their own engines. They have their own engine department. You know, that's a, well, it's about to become quite a common thing in Formula One, actually, but for years that has been a very rare thing, and it should be a huge advantage when you're designing a Formula One car. It should mean that you're one of the teams challenging at least for podiums. And there were signs a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, that Alpine was maybe starting to get everything in the right place and potentially move in the right direction, but it's all just collapsed like a house of cards. And now you have this situation where, you know, senior people have handed in their resignations before the start of the season, in Matt Harmon and Dirk de Beer, senior technical people. And how they've reacted is this kind of almost McLaren style approach of a new technical department based around three heads of departments. But unlike McLaren, where it seemed like that decision had come from the top as a strategic move to improve the way they went about building a race car, this seems much more reactionary in that they've delivered a pretty poor car, certainly by their standards. And now, with key people leaving, they're trying to have to, you know, solidify the foundations of their team. But none of it to me is very convincing. And so you've got the situation where there's a car that seems to be quite fundamentally flawed. On a number of levels. They changed the rear suspension this year, and one of their main issues early on has been struggling with traction out of slow corners, which is usually linked to rear suspension. Perhaps they can develop their way out of that, but another issue they faced was that the side impact structures failed their initial crash test. Not that unusual in F1, but it seems in order to solve that, they had to bulk up the car, and that means it's 10 kilos overweight. And then underlying all of this, remember I said that you should be an advantage to have your own engines. Well, it turns out the Alpine engine we've known for a little while now is underpowered compared to the rest. And it's all frozen in by the current regulations. It's very hard for them to improve the performance of it. So, you know, just on weight and engine performance alone, they're probably losing somewhere between half a second and 0.7 of a second per lap. You know, and so to try and, you know, build the rest of the car around that and you know, mask that, is incredibly difficult. And so they've got themselves in a situation where they have an incredibly slow car and people are just leaving the team. Clearly there's, you know, it seems as though, you know, the leadership there is not putting forward a strong enough argument for people to stay there and believe that things can be turned around.
I don't think that it's a foregone conclusion, but I would say it's pretty damn close that they're not going to be able to compete or turn this thing around like we saw McLaren do midway through the season, just because of all the fundamental issues that you just described regarding the car. When you look at these two drivers, I think Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon are extremely talented race winners, certainly. Like, I think that they have the pace. It's just a shame that they don't have the car to be able to compete, at least in the midfield or some of those top tier teams. When you look to 2026, do you foresee them essentially getting their shit together and being able to put together a better product? When does Pierre and Esteban's contracts run out? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, so the end of this year. So I don't know whether there's elements of options and how those options will play out, but I believe both of them potentially could be out of that team at the end of this year. So it is a tricky one, because I feel like they're going to get themselves off the back of the grid during this season. You know, they know fundamentally what some of these issues are, and they, you know, Matt Harmon was speaking at the Bahrain Grand Prix. I was part of about five or six journalists who happened to go and chat to him. This before news of his resignation had come out. And as their technical director, he was there talking to us about how they have things down the line that should hopefully mean that they can kind of progress and make fairly big steps. But none of it sounded like, as you mentioned, the McLaren kind of step forward, which I have to say, by the way, was incredible. You know, it's very rare we see a team go from the back grid up to second fastest in the course of a season. But I feel like they might be able to get themselves off the back of the grid. But you're right. The bigger question is really, you know, what can they do for 2026? And at the moment, that's kind of what I'm most worried about, because the fact that they've had this exodus of technical staff, another one we learned about today was Bob Bell, who was there really in an advisory role, but he's a guy who was, he's been in and out of the team. He's been to Mercedes during Mercedes championship years, but he was also at the Renault team, which was based out of the same factory in 2005 and 2006 when they won championships with Fernando Alonso. So a guy who kind of, I think, had a big commitment to that team, like, you know, almost emotionally committed to that team. Yet even he, in this relatively advisory, I think he's around 65, you know, so probably starting to think about retirement at some point. But even he, I think, you know, couldn't see the potential in it anymore and has gone to Aston Martin. It seems, you know, that that's the reason he would step away from it. So, yeah, I mean, that's a difficult thing, because even if you haven't started work on your 2026 car yet, and because the regulations aren't finalized, no team has really started meaningful work on it, and they won't do until the start of 2025. But the fact that already they're going to be piecing together a new technical structure so close to that focus shift into 2026 means that I just can't see how they compete. And also, their factory, while they've invested in a new simulator recently, the wind tunnel is very old. The facilities, you know, have never really been up to scratch with a Mercedes and a Ferrari and a Red Bull, and now Aston Martin as well, and McLaren have just upgraded wind tunnels and so on. And so they seem to have been kind of wanting to do it, you know, on maybe a bit more of a budget, but I don't think you can do that in modern F1 anymore and expect to
win the Haas championships.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the competition is just too good now to expect to just kind of, you know, find a way through. So it's really hard to know where that team's going to go, because it feels like it needs massive investment, and it feels like it just needs a direction and, you know, a proper technical director to come in and just give it the direction it needs. And while I'm not going to suggest that the three people that have been put in place instead of Matt Harmon can't do that, you know, maybe they can, but it just feels like it's a huge amount of pressure on them to turn it around in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, and you just wonder too, the season, what is the legitimate ceiling for this group? You hope they're able to make strides in the right direction, but what is the ceiling if they're able to do so?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I mentioned the FIA president. There's a lot kind of to sift through and break down here as well. So Mohammed bin Salam, there's two accusations, one current investigation. The two accusations come from the same whistleblower, two different incidents. Okay, so apparently the FIA president allegedly told officials not to certify the Las Vegas Grand Prix a year ago. The purpose was to find fault with the track in order to withhold the license. That's accusation number one. Accusation number two, and what he is under investigation for, is that he interfered with last year's Saudi Arabian Grand Prix by revoking an Alonso penalty to keep him on the podium. Okay, so of those two kind of accusations, where do you fall and what's more concerning? Surely that he's potentially interfering, because it's an allegation, he's potentially interfering in race results, right?
So I think we need to kind of, first of all, realize that these are very much allegations that have been made by a whistleblower. They have only been made public because of some very impressive reporting from the BBC that seems to have got hold of some of the reports that have been put to the FIA's ethics committee. The FIA itself has said that there is a report ongoing, but it hasn't named Mohammed Ben Sulayem in it. So, you know, there we're kind of relying on the report in some extent as well. Now, which is more concerning? Well, I think both, you know, if true, if there's any truth in this, would be concerning in different ways. To start with the Las Vegas one, each circuit, when it comes into Formula One, each new circuit requires homologation from the FIA, which is kind of a fancy way of saying approval. So they get grade one homologation and then the race can go ahead. Now, Las Vegas got that on time and there were no, you know, obvious issues flagged. And that's also mentioned in the report that basically there was nothing they could find that would have delayed it. And it also seems that the recollection of certain people in this were slightly different to what the whistleblower said. So I would certainly apply some caution on exactly what is going to come out of this investigation before we judge too harshly what Mohammed Ben Sulayem did or didn't do. But of course, that would be concerning because there must have been, if he did do it, I guess there would have been some other motivation behind it. And then it would be kind of digging into why would an FIA president want to make sure that this kind of very important race to Formula One was in some way disrupted. In terms of the interfering with the result of a Grand Prix, well, of course, that is also concerning. And if true, of course, but that comes down to the FIA stewards being, while we call them the FIA stewards, they are in fact independent. So even to the point this year where they've got them wearing a different uniform to the rest of the FIA to show that they are independent of the FIA. So the FIA is not meant to have any influence on their decision making, and rightly so, because occasionally the stewards may have to take a decision based on the FIA's own operation and the own way that they've run the race. So that would also be concerning. But look, I think until we've got more detail here, which we don't seem to have at the moment, despite the reporting from the BBC, until we've got more detail and they've actually been properly linked to the FIA president, I think, I'd like to kind of, you know, just hold off on kind of throwing too many accusations out there, but both would be concerning if true.
Is it fair to say that Ben Sulayem is someone who marches to the beat of his own drum? I feel like the way he's handled his FIA presidency has maybe been a little bit more out there, more of a focal point than, say, people who have held the position in the past.
Yeah, so that's absolutely the case, I think. And I think one of the things Ben Sulayem's tried to do is show that the FIA is still relevant within Formula One. It still has a place where it, you know, it's needed. It's needed as this kind of policeman or police kind of force of the sport. Mm-hmm. I think he's been kind of quite adversarial in his way of going about that. And then if you look at the way Jean Todt, his predecessor, treated that role, he was very conflict averse and would basically, you know, he was powerful within the sport, but he tried to make sure that, you know, things happened and the focus remained on the track. So there's definitely been a bit of a power struggle between Formula One, when we talk about Formula One, the commercial rights holder, Formula One management, which is owned by Liberty Media, and the FIA. And ultimately, I suspect, you know, it comes down to money, because the commercial rights that Liberty Media own are on a 100-year lease from the FIA, which a lease that was agreed under Max Mosley in the early 2000s with his good mate Bernie Ecclestone for a relatively small amount of money. And therefore, you know, the FIA is kind of reliant on, to some extent, I mean, it does have other sources of income, but it's reliant to some extent on money coming from Formula One and being paid as part of this kind of Concorde agreement, is what we call it, but this agreement that binds the teams, the FIA and the commercial rights holder together. And so it seems that ultimately the FIA want a bigger share of the pie going forward to ensure that it can continue to do what it's doing and continue to monitor the sport in the way that it wants to and all the projects that it has outside of Formula One as well. So, you know, it seems fundamentally that's what it comes down to. But there's now we're now at a position where, yeah, you know, it is increasingly adversarial between Formula One and Ben Salim. And so, you know, I think the way that Ben Salim's going about his presidency, you know, it has created more headlines than previous FI presidents, certainly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think at times that's also been pounced upon and, you know, and has created to the, you know, added to this rift between the commercial rights holder and the FIA.
It's interesting because I think most sports fans, they love drama that surrounds the sport that they are passionate about. Obviously, profits right now in Formula One are sky high. Fan base is at a peak. I would say that Bahrain was a bit boring, quite frankly, of a race. But then you have these scandals, drama off track that we've obviously alluded to in this episode. You know, some people would say, you know, this is bad business. And then some people say, well, no, it's saving the sport, given that we're going to likely have another Red Bull Max Verstappen championship this year. That was interesting because Lewis Hamilton was asked about, you know, the recent off-track controversies today. And he said, as someone who loves the sport, it's definitely disappointing to see what's going on right now. It doesn't look good to the outside world, and it doesn't look good from the inside either. It's a really pivotal moment for the sport in terms of what we project to the world and how it's handled. And it's not been handled very well to this point. What do you think about that? Do you think drama, off-track drama, is good for the sport, or it's bad for the overall view of what Formula One is and stands for?
I think it depends on the drama and the source of it. You know, some of the stuff we've had in Netflix where it's Christian Horner versus Toto Wolff, mm-hmm. and a bit of rivalry, which is linked to what's going on track, is fine. But I don't believe that the stories and the nature of the stories that have come out at the start of this year have done F1 any favors. And also, I really don't think that anyone would read those stories and be encouraged to watch the sport. You know, I think the only reason they would be some kind of, you know, slightly perverse voyeurism of trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. And I don't think that's a good position for the sport to be in. And, you know, it is possible to have two problems with the sport. You know, these issues away from the track involving some very high profile individuals within the sport, and the fact that the on-track product is pretty dull at the moment, or at least it was on the basis of the one race that we saw and most of last season. And, you know, I don't see one as a kind of antidote for the other or vice mm-hmm. versa. You know, I think they're both issues with Formula One, and ones that the sport will have to address in very different ways. You know, the issue with the controversies, as so many people in F1 have said, and I totally agree, you know, transparency is often the only way out of this. And, you know, sometimes it might be like ripping the plaster off, but sometimes I think it's better to get information, as long as, you know, the people involved with some of these controversies are protected and their privacy is protected. I think sometimes just, you know, getting stuff out there is the best way to get rid of it. And then with the on-track racing, you know, it's really a case of how do you bring the field closer together. Red Bull has this big advantage at the moment. There's no real reason to believe that advantage will slip over the next 2 years. I think it might get slightly closer. I think at certain tracks it will be closer, but it's hard to imagine a situation where Max Verstappen doesn't win another world championship based on what we saw in Bahrain. So, you know, that's not a great position to be in. You know, can you imagine starting an NFL season and saying with certainty that one team's going to win the Super Bowl? You know, it kind of takes the fun out of it, doesn't it? So, yeah, yes. That's an altogether separate problem.
Did you say ripping off the plaster?
Yeah. Like when you have a plaster, and like rather than peel it off, because, you know, sometimes it hurts when you take a plaster off, you just got to rip it off in one go.
So Band-Aid.
A Band-Aid.
Okay, yeah. But that's what... I was like, that's the most English thing I think I've ever heard him say. And I was like, surely that's our version of Band-Aid.
It is. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I should. Yeah.
I love it.
I need the American translation.
As we finalize our episode on a pretty dreary, desolate standpoint with where the sport takes. We appreciate it as always. We've got a Jeddah preview episode coming up. So just know that the positivity is going to kick up. But we definitely thought that it was worth going through some of the different storylines currently surrounding the sport outside, off the track, because it is unbelievably fascinating. And we will, of course, keep you up to date with any more fallout or decisions that are made in the future. Thanks for watching Unlapped. Katie George, Lawrence Edmondson, we appreciate you. Thanks. Cheers. And we'll see you next time.